And now here's May with part two.
Okay, we'll go on now, and it gets a little complicated, so fair warning. After these seven people from Fairchild, top people, were killed in that crash, there was the resignation of the president of Fairchild, abruptly, unexpected, high-salaried person, been with the company 14 years, walked out, does not have any more to do with the company. And as I say, there's a quotation from an analyst with Morgan Stanley, who evidently handles the account of Fairchild. It's not going to be well received the way he walked out. Well, about 3 days after that article in the paper, there was a obituary notice on Henry S. Morgan. He's old enough to die. We can't presume everybody is killed. But just coincidentally, Henry Sturgis Morgan is the grandson of J. Pierpont Morgan. And he was in banking, investment banking on Wall Street. Then he formed Morgan Stanley and Company, the same company that is complaining, that carries the Fairchild. He was elected a director of General Electric Company in 1935 and stayed with them after the war. Of course, General Electric is the company that sponsored Ronald Reagan and touted him for president for years, touring all over the United States under General Electric Company. He served in the Navy in 1951. He became the director of Aetna Insurance Company. And Aetna Insurance Company is the company that Marvin Davis went to for money. Aetna has bought out. Marvin Davis bought 20th Century Fox on huge loans, and he bought Pebble Beach, our area up here. And then Aetna came in to bail him, to put in buildings or insurance companies out in L.A. in Century City. So that Aetna was right behind Marvin Davis. And this particular Henry Sturgis Morgan, the grandson of J. Pierpont Morgan, was involved with General Electric, Aetna Insurance, and he formed Morgan Stanley that handled the Fairchild business. And so all of these bases were brought out in that article, and he passed away 3 days after this John F. Dealey, the president of Fairchild, resigned. Now, there was another article in the Wall Street Journal, January the 11th. Western Airline expands its board to 15 people. And last week, I did quite a detailed broadcast on Mr. Neil Burke and how he took a trip around the world and came back with $50 million. His Alaska International Airline was the one that supplied the transport plane, one of the three that Gaddafi got that was illegal to ship to Gaddafi. He'd gone to London, procured money to buy three of these transports, and one went to Miami and then off to Gaddafi. Then he took this nice little trip and came back with $50 million to buy Ween Airlines in Alaska, and then was going to turn Ween into Western. And as I mentioned last week, it was Air Florida that wanted to buy Western Airlines and put up the started the bidding or buying in June of 81, so that Mr. Burke came back with this money and went to Western Airlines in October of 81 and said, I think I'll take over and be the board or chairman of Western Airlines, and December became the chairman and director without salary. And just 2 days before the Air Florida plane went into the water, he selected four new directors, and one of them was Fred Benninger, chairman and chief executive of MGM Grand Hotels. And now this gets a little more complicated. He also has an officer from Northwest Energy Company he chose to be on the board, and another friend, George Suttig from Alaska National Insurance, and Roy Utter, a Western airline pilot. So just 2 days before the Air Florida crash, and that company had never had a crash and wanted to buy Western, Fred Benninger, chairman and chief executive of MGM, was put on the board of Western. Now, the attorney for, I have an interesting series of articles about Mr. Benninger, and the attorney for MGM, Greg Boutzer, and a group of people who just made a shift in control of MGM. Along those lines, today, or this week rather, was an article, a new head is named at MGM Studio. There's a shift of positions of a lot of people. As I say, Air Florida in June 81 want to buy Western Airlines. In July of 81, they had the simulated crash of that kind of an airplane on a bridge in the Potomac, 5.5 miles south of where that went in. In September 81, Edward Acker, who made Air Florida successful, left and went to Pan America, they were losing money to Air Florida. And then after the crash, well, just before the crash, and I figure this fits in, but it's very complicated. Bill Holden died in November of 1981, just before the first of the year, and Natalie Wood died in November 27, 1981, November 29th. Now, Holden was an international traveler, and I told you I would do broadcasts soon in the future on William Holden with his Swiss bank accounts. He was a partner with Mr. Khashoggi of Lockheed, of Saudi Arabia. They had this compound in Kenya, the wild animal compound. He had an interesting life, this Bill Holden. He's traveled with Stephanie Powers, who makes the TV series Heart to Heart with Robert Wagner. Natalie Wood was working at MGM when she died. They were in the middle of this film when she was killed, and there are many articles now coming out suggesting the evidence that Thomas DiGucci in Los Angeles has died about the autopsy, and maybe you see on the newsstands articles that are beginning to seep out with more facts about her death. And the in between those time periods, and I'm going into the Air Florida story because on the board of Western Airlines that wanted to stop Air Florida from taking over Western, MGM enters the picture. Now, last week, February the 8th, Frank Rothman, a top lawyer for the entertainment industry, was made head of MGM. He's a close advisor to Kirk Kerkorian, who controls MGM, and he's now been made a chairman. Now, Kerkorian is one of these people who wanted to buy MGM. Mr. Bronfman of Seagram's Whiskey was chairman of the board. He wanted to control the studio. Kerkorian goes over to Germany, and I'll do more details on the minute, and picks up the money from London and Germany to plunk down the cash to buy MGM and have the controlling interest. Now, Mr. Rothman this last week was shifted to be chairman of MGM, and he came from the law firm of Wyman, Bautzer, Cook, Kuchel, K-U-C-H-E-L, and Silbert. Greg Bautzer was the attorney for Howard Hughes and has worked with the CIA all his life, and this same law office, Rothman, that just moved into MGM, represents American Broadcasting System. If you ever listen to ABC, Hilly Rose in Los Angeles, or believe it's Ray Bream, or you listen to Owen Spann or Ron Owens or Jim Eason, if you ever wondered on KGO why you can't talk about Frank Turpel or Edwin Wilson or the Polish Pope or the CIA or any of the subjects we talk about here, if I call KGO, they cut you off. When Bob Trevor and I talked about these things, he was moved out of the newscasting and he reads a news script. He can't have his talk show anymore. The head of a lawyer for American Broadcasting Companies is the office of Greg Bautzer of the CIA, the same attorney for the Howard Hughes people. So there's no mystery into the long talk shows of ABC, whether it's the David Hartman show, Good Morning America, or any other of those programs. The attorney for Kerkorian moved in to become head. And also, part of this corporation switch, it mentions in the Los Angeles Times this week, Fred Benninger of MGM Grand Hotels, and his role with the MGM Studios. And Benninger was put by Burke on the board of Western Airlines to salvage Western Airlines to keep Air Florida from taking control. Now, that Mr. Kerkorian story is a fascinating one. I have a book called Kerkorian, The American Dream. It's about the first tycoon of leisure. And this is hardly the American dream. It's the cover tells about the man from rags to riches who takes chances. In the early 50s, he accumulated his first million. A few years later, it was tens of million. And he went on to control Western Airlines and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer studio. He put up his money. Today, he has over $100 million, according to this book that came out a few years ago. Now, when he wanted control of MGM, he was competing with Bronfman for control, and he went to Greg Bautzer, the attorney for Howard Hughes. And then Kerkorian goes off to London, and he meets with the Warburgs over there and bankers in order to take control of MGM. And he has appointments there with a man from Jean-Louis de Gunsberg, a director of a banking firm of Burston in Texas, which is a London firm where the Texas National Bank of Commerce in Houston has 35% interest. And then they set him up with another person who is Otto Schoeppler, S-C-H-O-E-P-P-L-E-R. And Schoeppler comes out of a firm called Bankhaus Burkhardt and Company, an old line banking firm in Essen, West Germany. And they speak to Kerkorian, and they immediately hand him $50 million to buy MGM. So you wonder, where are these studios getting the money? Who's running this country? Who decides what films are made? Who in the heck are these people like Otto Schoeppler, any more than we knew about Fritz Kramer or the Bankhaus Burkhardt and Company? This one book on Kerkorian says the speed with which he borrowed such sums inspired rumors the money came from mysterious sources, such as syndicate money that went from Las Vegas to Switzerland, numbered Swiss accounts, or was it Bernie Kornfield, the magnate of overseas mutual funds, sharing his 1.8 billion assets, or was it Aristotle Onassis money? When they asked him where he got the money to buy this studio, he sought unsuccessfully to find out. He said Burkhold has his funds. It's a consortium of European banks. His attorney, Gerald Schutzbank, S-C-H-U-T-Z-B-A-N-K, said Kerkorian never questions the source of the funds. His asking German bankers for the source of their funds would have been considered offensive. When they loan him money, he doesn't ask where they got it. Now, the reason this is important in terms of 1984 or control of our minds or the media or the films we see or what gets on ABC or any of the other stations is who are these people and what is their connection to the people from Nazi Germany, the IG Farben Combine or Collection? How is it that they come in and then they get on the board of these various organizations, and the head of MGM Hotels gets on the board of directors of Western Airlines 2 days before Air Florida crashes in Washington, and Air Florida is trying to get control of Western Airlines. When you get a small company who's in business on their own trying to take a certain route, they don't stand a chance at all, because in come these big hunks of money and we don't know where they're coming from. Now, the important, I don't want to complicate too much the connections of Aetna Insurance with the Morgans and with 20th Century Fox, except that they have put up a lot of money to bail out Marvin Davis. Evidently, he is a multimillionaire on his own, but there also is a lot of money behind him to come in that is linked to the Morgans or Fairchild to supply the funds he needed for the transaction of buying up the area in West Los Angeles, the Fox Studios, so that MGM is controlled by one faction, Gulf and Western owns Paramount, 20th Century Fox is owned by investment bankers of another sort, whether it's Fairchild with their German connections, the aerospace industry. The studios have always been controlled by certain large interests. Originally, they started as individual families, the Louis Mayer or the Warner family or Harry Cohn, but they've been taken over, and the entertainment business is big business. Now, Natalie Wood worked for MGM. She was involved in a movie at the time that she died. The movie was a controversial one. The person that was making it with her, Cliff Robinson, had been fired 3 years ago. He'd been blacklisted because he couldn't make a movie, and he had blown the whistle on Mr. Bagelman, who works at MGM, who was producing the picture, because he exposed a swindling and a large amount of money at the time, and Bagelman got a slap on the wrist and left one studio and went on off to MGM to work for Kerkorian, and they were producing that movie, A Brainstorm, at the time that Natalie Wood died. Several articles, as I say, are on the stand about Natalie, and the reason I bring it up is that MGM is controlled by Kerkorian and Greg Bouncer of the CIA, and the law, they represent Rothman's offices, the American Broadcasting Company, and large corporations, Paramount Studio, and a lot of what goes in Hollywood, like the attorney for the Howard Hughes Empire. So when you work for these companies and you make trips, such as she did to the Soviet Union, or William Holden traveling up to, planning his trip to Siberia, and they're traveling all over the world, They can be used for spying purposes, going back to Natalie's white Russian background, her anti-communist political feelings. And Natalie Wood's attorney, along with Robert Wagner, is Paul Ziffern, who's in the office of William French Smith, the attorney general. So the Natalie Wood story, whatever happened, and one reason to be suspicious of the entangling webs of the Metro Golden Mirror Combine and somebody from MGM Hotels being put on the board of Western is that there have been a series of articles, and I haven't gone into detail yet, about the discrepancies in her death, and I couldn't even begin to guess who or what or why, except several articles did say that she left the scene of a conflict of argument about politics. Christopher Walken, her co-star in the movie she was making, and Robert Wagner, her husband, had a fight or an argument about politics. Now, that was from three different sources, but what it was or who they were talking about or where politics entered, I'm sure none of us will ever know, except that it was politics. The person who found her is saying now that she appeared to struggle for hours in the dark, the person who took her body out of the water, that there were bruises on her body, that the ship that Wagner had was literally a drugstore with every kind of pill. It was a floating drugstore. That rigor mortis hadn't set in by the time they found her, that if she'd been in there for hours, she would have been stiff by then, and she had a cut on her cheek. At 1:30, her husband called the Harbor Reef and Saloon, a restaurant in Catalina, and asked the manager if he saw Natalie. Now, at 3:30, 2 hours later, the restaurant manager called the Private Harbor Patrol, and at 5:15, 2 hours after that, they went looking for her, and at 7:15, she was spotted by a helicopter. She was found near that dinghy, that boat, and according to the experts who found her, if she goes over the side and the boat isn't attached, the boat floats according to the wind, and a body float is affected by the current, so they don't travel together, and yet she was just several hundred feet from the boat. Now, on the ship, according to these reports, 13 days before her death, she had had 28 Darvon, 29 Placidils. She used something called Synthroid. She had 13 Bactrim tablets. She took Dalmain for sleeping and Antivert for dizzy spells. And so that she had been drinking, she had Darvon and Cyclizone, C-Y-C-L-I-Z-I-N-E, Cyclizine. So that she was pretty much done in like Elvis Presley. She was overdosed and evidently couldn't fend for herself under any circumstances, even if she hung on. She probably was meant not to survive with all of that. The changes that I see in the newspaper just this last week, or going over them recently, in chronological order from, say, December until February, seem large. This William French Smith representing Holden and Natalie, and Robert Wagner, rather, and Natalie, and the seven Rockwell officials, high officials, being killed in that one plane crash, and then the president of Rockwell resigning a few days later, just leaving, and the head of MGM Hotels being put on the board of Western. This is all in January. And in February, as I say, the president of Rockwell leaves and MGM changes its head, and Frank Rothman comes in with the law firm of Bautzer and so forth. And then Henry Morgan of Morgan Stanley just died, and he has the controlling interest of Aetna Insurance that took over the studio 20th Century Fox where Robert Wagner works. So Robert Wagner is working under Marvin Davis with his connections to the Aetna Insurance, and she worked for MGM with the Kerkorian, Greg Bautzer, Howard Hughes Empire connections over there. And the middleman between Natalie Wood and her husband Wagner is William French Smith, the attorney, the common denominator, the attorney general. And William French Smith is also represented Rockwell. That was one of his clients before he became the attorney general. Those are a lot of names to throw out, but they have a common thread running through them, and in other broadcasts I'll go into more about it. But the Fairchild changes, the shifts in MGM change, and the connections of these various people, some of these stories we won't know. I mean, sure, there's things behind the Natalie Wood story, just as the Marilyn Monroe death, whether she was in love with John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy, or she knew too much about Jimmy Hoffa or Sam Giancana and the people who eventually were going to kill Kennedy the next year. She had to be done away with. We'll never really know, because certainly the people involved aren't going to talk, and there's a lot of speculation. But there's a lot of bases here with William French Smith and Rockwell, and being the attorney for Wagner, his law office, the attorney for Wagner and Natalie Wood. There's an overlapping of names, insurance companies, studio ownership, shifting the ownership at 20th Century Fox, shifting the faces at MGM, moving the MGM hotels to the board of Western. A lot of activity going on of people who are involved at the highest echelons of the government intelligence. It just makes me wonder what is going on. It reminds me of the Continental Airlines last year. There was a effort by the Texas International Airlines to take over Continental Airlines. That was just in August of 1981. And then the president of Continental Airlines died quickly and mysteriously at his office. There was a gun. And again, the Continental Airlines that was holding its own, trying to fight Texas International at the time that Al Feldman, the president, was found dead, owed money to the same Aetna Life Insurance and Casualty that moved into 20th Century Fox. And then again, the name Aetna comes out in the Morgan obituary, in the Continental story, Chase Manhattan and Aetna Insurance that Continental lenders owed money to. And at the time of the conflict of Continental trying to break even and hold its own through 1982, if it get another loan and stay on top, just at that time, the Continental chairman had what they call an apparent suicide. It was either an apparent heart attack or an apparent suicide. There's a gun by his desk, some shots in him, and he was killed just at a time that he's fighting to hold on to his airline. So we really don't know too much about these apparent deaths. With Thomas Noguchi in charge of the autopsies in Los Angeles, and I do want to do quite a bit on Thomas Noguchi soon, it's very hard to tell who's murdered and what's justifiable homicide, whether people are outright murdered or they actually did commit suicide. These suspicious deaths that are in the news have been proven to be covered up in Los Angeles. There's one case now where the heir, Eli Lilly, is being exhumed, the body. He was found dead in a hotel, and they said it was natural causes, apparent natural causes. And then the family demanded that the body be exhumed, which is going to be this week. Noguchi was involved with that autopsy, and he has a wife they call the Dragon Lady. The family said that she controlled his millions of dollars and wanted them. And she was a former secretary and advisor to Mayor Yorty, Sam Yorty in Los Angeles, who, again, is another political person. And the Eli Lilly fortune from Indiana, I believe Bloomington, the drug firm, was controlled by this man who was dead, buried at Forest Lawn. And now they're questioning that, and they're exhuming that body. And speaking of that, I just want to make a couple of comments on that airplane in Boston that we talked about a few weeks ago. Family of two men lost in the crash will sue the airline. This is from the San Jose Mercury, February the 2nd. The family of the father and son who were misplaced and presumed dead will file a lawsuit. Walter Metcalf, 7, and the son, Leo, who was 40 years old, were pitched out of the jet when it skidded at the runway in Boston. They were not reported missing for 72 hours. Members of the family went, and they said, go to the police, the Missing Persons Bureau. And the one article says there's no sign of the body, but remember, the divers from the Coast Guard went down, saw a body, and didn't bring it up because they were told that everyone was accounted for. Well, because of that, they're being sued for millions of dollars for the infliction of emotional distress and outrage as a result of what went on after the crash. They were listed at no show at the gate, that they didn't show up. Just the two people who didn't show up from New Jersey, they came in from Florida and picked up that World Airways flight that was coming in from Oakland to New Jersey and then up to Boston. And they asked the question, where in the system the Metcalfs' names were misplaced, it's impossible to tell. when they said the bodies weren't found, they said, well, then there's no names. No other persons were similarly misplaced. And, of course, I mentioned once before, that has to be the biggest coincidence in the world, to misplace the name of two people to get through the gate and have those exact two people no trace of their body. Last week, I just mentioned briefly, and I want to do some more on Michael Sindona and the Red Brigades and go to that escape of great NATO officer Dozier. I think that whole thing was a disgusting setup, such as the SLA operation that went on here a few years ago in California. But I mentioned several weeks ago Michael Sindona being charged with murder, and I mentioned David Kennedy, who was the Secretary of the Treasury under Richard Nixon, being indicted in New York for $23 million missing from a bank in Milan. What I didn't know, and I got an article sent to me, this is from 1974, the Wall Street Journal. At the time, the New York Franklin Bank Corporation that collapsed, a $45 million that Michael Sindona was responsible, another company called the New York Franklin New York Corporation, which was a parent of the Franklin National Bank, suffered losses of more than $60 million in the first 5 months. Franklin announced the election of Joseph Barr, a former U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, as chairman, president, and chief executive of the bank and the holding company. Now, David Kennedy, the Secretary of the Treasury, was involved with Michael Sindona when the Franklin National Bank collapsed for $45 million. Then the Franklin New York Corporation, a parent of the Franklin National Bank, was missing $60 million. So they bring in the for a new management, the deputy under David Kennedy for the other company that was losing $60 million. That was a lot of money to be lost at one time. And, of course, it's like the chicken being guarded by the fox again, the same old story. The Secretary of the Treasury is involved in one operation with Michael Sindona and the mischief of missing millions of dollars out of Italy and also the United States. They work closely with the Republican Party, but then another parent company to the Franklin National Bank was also missing $60 million. I wasn't so aware in 1974. It took me, I think, until about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago to begin to watch the missing millions. And some evening, I'll do just one entire broadcast on large amounts of money that are moving around, allegedly missing. And that's what I wonder when this fellow resigned from Fairchild, Mr. Dealey, really quickly. They were at least on the books missing a large amount of money, and they were a cover for the CIA, and one of their people did work from Australia. They used Fairchild as the cover for the Nugan Hand Bank, and maybe he quickly got out because the pieces and threads of the Nugan Hand Bank have yet to be exposed, and we have to watch how this money floats around. And finally, we've got about a minute and a half. I have to go in detail in a few weeks on the Penthouse trial going on. That's Jeff Gerth and Penthouse Magazine, who were being sued by La Costa for links that the Penthouse wrote, or published. Jeff Gerth wrote that La Costa down near San Diego is linked to organized crime. Louis Neiser is representing Mo Dalitz and La Costa, which is fitting. He was one of the attorneys that wrote an introduction to the Warren Report, and Mo Dalitz had close connections to the crime figures and Robert Mayhew and the assassination teams involved with the Kennedy assassination. This is an interesting trial. Louis Neiser and the Mo Dalitz and La Costa. Read your articles in the newspaper about the Penthouse trial. Mo Dalitz, according to the Los Angeles Times, admits ties to mob chieftains. That's one article. I have a whole lot of articles on the La Costa trial. And with Louis Neiser representing them, he also is the attorney that prosecuted the Rosenbergs, that works with Roy Cohn, a very controversial attorney representing the mob and the CIA. Well, we can't get into that now. There's not enough time, but I did want to cover some bases on these various names and people that I think have a interlocking relationship. If they seem complicated to you now, just as the names did at Watergate at the time, that started breaking out, and I keep referring back to that. They will become more familiar, I'm sure, in time. There are a lot of stories now that are all bursting at one time, and you have to keep track of them, some of these insurance companies, some of these changes, the heads of corporations, because they all have certain common denominators. So do your homework this week. Read those papers, and I'll read mine, and I'll get back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International.